Sunday, the 15th of April, 2012. I've decided to do the usual and make a small doco about the making of The Glory Has Fallen using recordings of the work notes. Also, as usual, I haven't edited or amplified these in any way. Thursday, the 24th of November, 2011. Have begun a first cull of so-called abstract files from various hard disks as a first step in the making of a new multi-channel work. My rationale is that any files I've already manufactured and used must display some sort of quality that appealed to me at the time, something that took my attention in some way. Using these as a starting point for more treatment seems to make sense. The session spatial test is a beginning. In this session, I feel I've begun to understand how to use the three arrays judiciously and consistently to spatialize materials effectively, so that they retain their original authenticity and don't sound as if their spatial character has been contrived. We shall see what eventuates. Is this the first truly abstract work? I just have a sense that now I understand what's needed, not in any way that I can put into words, only at an intuitive level, a trust in myself that was lacking before. After all, the full three-array configuration is relatively recent and needed time to mature internally. The glory is fallen out of the sky. Friday, the 9th of December, 2011. Interesting place I've reached. No extant performance model as yet. This may change. I graze over the available files with an informed sensitivity, sensing rather than looking for useful materials. Useful, a word that's become almost entirely tilted away from the pragmatic prosaic definition towards the subjective side. This entire process feels the closest I've yet got to my ideal. Completely unforced work processes, happening almost every day, producing a deepening continuum of effort until it becomes almost effortless. Memory, retaining information, being able to retrieve files that have been passed over days, even weeks beforehand, sifting through the thousands of discrete bits of data until I know where each lives and what sort of personality each exhibits. This can only happen and be sustained with continuous exposure to the materials every day. If I miss a day of searching, I feel my capability decline exponentially. No method of organisation of the data works to ease this requirement. It doesn't matter how the files are catalogued, they still need to be present and retrievable in my mind. The only search engine that gives me the information that allows a useful exploitation of the idea. That's that word again. Useful. Full of use. Saturday, the 10th of December, 2011. The materials I'm now developing will become subsets to a further layer of more prime material, probably two or three contrasted ideas. I need to now ignore this fact and develop the present sessions as if they were in fact prime, fully articulated and spatialized. Then I shall find out how they fit around, over, and through the as yet unfound prime stuff. This is a major intimation, but I mustn't be impatient. Just stay at the level I am now at and not jump the gun. This can be quite difficult. Monday, the 12th of December, 2011. An interesting dilemma is now emerging. As I add files to each newly added to session, so the nature of the entire session alters. This, of course, is just what one would expect. I save every individual stage as a separate session. The problem is, when do I stop and accept a particular stage as correct? Every time I add a file, I upset the balance previously achieved and also the underlying meaning. My intuition tells me that eventually I will understand which sessions to use and which go with what. Actually, this process should lead to the evolution of fully integrated materials, providing I can sustain the pressure of not knowing for long enough. Same old problem, of remaining for as long as possible in a suspended state regarding the eventual outcome of the work processes. Thursday, the 15th of December, 2011. The moan files seem to have triggered a voice element which links to the shaman thing I've been on about lately. Gives me a heads up for the next work, shamanistic utterances. Vocal gestures which transform and influence all other sounds, both natural and cultural. The slowed down moan, sounding very like a sick generator or motor of some kind, insists on being present, even when the only evidence is the convolved effects of its morphology.
Well, I think the glory that's fallen out of the sky is a way of expressing the end of a season, the sun's gone. And that because the tenses are strange, like the is present and fallen, past, it's sort of like it is happening, but it's reminiscent of the, indicates the year that's gone, that's gone in front.
Sunday, the 18th of December, 2011. A performance model has now emerged after an early stride through the gardens. Vocal utterance transposed down to a point where the vocal cord flap is audible. These being individual oscillations of the cords. The sound carries two seemingly quite separate spectral bands, one being the very low frequency body of the sound, at a very low amplitude, the other a soft mid-frequency lilt, which I find intensely numinous. Stages. 1. The sound alone in various transformational aspects. 2. This sound functioning as an amplitude modulator for other programs. 3. The eventual gradual transposition of this sound into its vocal range to be revealed as an actual voice.
Tuesday, the 20th of December, 2011.
Turning into a perpetual motion piece, the shaman's vocal cords just can't stop flapping. The oscillations seem to be present continuously, even when they are not. Must try to keep the voice otherworldly, without being kitsch or too overt. Plenty of breath gestures suited to stretching. Use the breaths from Clemency's work, or make some of my own.
The last immortal leaf is dead.
What one are we looking at?
Well, at the very beginning. The last immortal leaf is dead.
Yeah.
And I can't quite stop.
Do you think that's like saying...
I think that's like life after death.
That's what he's introducing.
This is the immortal leaf where we know
but
the leaves
dead.
Are going to die.
So
yeah, but we know they're going to come
so
back.
So you're saying, in other words, that...
Every inch, yeah, ounce of our being knows the leaves come back.
Thank you. For me, what it's saying is...
Wednesday, the 4th of January, 2012. Image of the shaman's voice keeps insisting. The idea of making sonograms of spoken words and phrases, which then can be used to filter recordings of various realities, from recognisable scenarios to internalised thoughts and feelings. The problem is to stop this becoming a spooky kitsch thing, a Darth Vader character. This means the semantic morphology should be extant, but the actual content never apprehended. I need to find ways of using the formant information in a subtle way, the filtering working in some implied rather than overt fashion. The overall idea of a powerful entity capable of releasing the spectromorphological energy of the universe, whose speech patterns follow the inhalation-exhalation character of the human, but whose vocabulary and grammar are rooted in the spiritual, natural dimension. It is another breath idea, but this time a superhuman breath. Note, maybe the yoga breathing from the clemency work could be used here, protracted breath gradually increasing in duration until it is impossibly protracted, an inhalation which begins to suck in other sonic materials, to inhale the world. The world inhaled, digested in some way, and then exhaled. World wisdom being extracted at the point of full inhalation, and then the husk breathed out. Spiritual food being inhaled, used up, and the leftover remains, now devoid of nutrients, being expelled. I think this might be a performance model. Can't seem to do without one.
Does change the sense of that immortal word. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Saturday, the 7th of January, 2012. Back to the glorious fallen. Now I want to set this poem by isolating each consecutive poetic image, describing the implications of each as fully as possible, and then manufacturing a sound world that fully expresses that description. Couldn't be simpler. Then I shall bring them, the sound worlds, together in the correct order. QED. But then, do I also present the poem in some form, or only its sonic equivalent? Saturday, the 7th of January, 2012, point one. Description of the poetic implications of each image in The Glory Has Fallen. Image one, The Glory Has Fallen Out of the Sky. Constituent images, 1, the glory. 2, the glory has fallen. 3, the glory has fallen out of the sky. 1, the glory. What is the glory? Glory, noun, renown, honourable fame, adoring praise, glory be, devout, or vulgar, surprised. Resplendent majesty, beauty, etc. Heavenly bliss and splendour, go to glory, die, be destroyed. Exalted or prosperous state, source of renown, special distinction, halo of a saint, etc. Glorify, make glorious, invest with radiance, extol. So the prime meaning of glory is sacred rather than secular. It celebrates all that is good and true and pure in human existence. It's not mundane or sublimated, full tutti rather than muted lower strings. The glottal G, 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 launches the vowel with unstoppable energy, and the closing breathy glory leaves the end of the word open, encouraging it to resonate far into the following silence. The vowel is deep-throated rather than brazenly bright. It's a roar of full-scale recognition and approval. It holds back nothing. It is radiant with unstoppable, energetic, optimistic love. It is also a formal recognition of worth, a sort of reward for integrity and prolonged commitment. It pulsates with radiant power. The glory is fallen. Fall. Go or come down freely. Descend. Then lots of other meanings qualified by context. If the glory is fallen, then all that is good and true and honourable has come down freely or descended. Fall, succumbing to temptation, the fall of man, Adam's sin and its results. Saturday, the 7th of January 2012, point 2. The poet describes death via a series of poetic images. The fall of the glory, the death of the immortal leaf, the gold year becoming a dusty spasm. He then puts this forward as an inevitable fact, as the passing of all shining things. We are then encouraged to accept the fact that this process includes us, and we are asked not to resist, to blandly descend into receptive earth. Then the poet addresses the wind, death's harbinger, and asks it to remove and dispose of our splendours because we desire death, to sleep. We are then extolled not to draw back from this inevitable fate, but to embrace it gladly and step forthrightly into death, the serious, steep darkness. And the gold year, a formal spasm in the dust.
Okay, now can you see? Because I can put more light on. That's a lovely idea. Can you read what? Can you read what?
Souls, and he mentions.
But you think of all the people that have died.
What do you think? That's what he's saying. He's saying.
I think he might be putting in a little nudge.
So if you get, if you take the very first image, the last immortal leaf is dead. In other words, it's going to come back again, and then we go into the serious deep darkness. We actually come out the other end.
back into the light again.
Because, you know, even though you're...
Well, it's not so bad after all.
So you're doing this continually.
Just have to do it. Well, you're not. You can't go blandly. You've got to work it out and know what you're in for, and you're coming back.
We need to do this before we socialise. Then he says, but look, then
see
he says,
into the glory faces on the other side.
Yeah,
this is the passing of all shining things. Friday, the 13th of January, 2012. It seems the E.E. Cummings is going to be set no matter what. I've been looking at the series of listening analyses I made in 2005, and the unequivocal conclusion reached there, namely, that neither pure abstraction nor solely mimetic materials will suffice. The former produces morbidity of content, and the latter banal reality. Somewhere there exists a combination that carries the potential to fire the third unbidden dimension, a quality that propels the work into a predicative state where the sounds engender a sense of significance, a meaning, which, although it remains indefinable, hovers as a real, unavoidable, irrepressible conclusion for the listener. So, the poem must be there in some semantic form, but the sounds must also be themselves, a complementary element to the data of the spoken word, but also capable of prompting their own independent implications. It's so difficult to describe this quality. The sounds must not remain merely sonic illustrations of the poetic images, but they necessarily require those images in order to transcend being empty formal ciphers. Certainly, one of the most important aspects is that the sound world needs to inhabit long passages of its own, where no spoken word intrudes and where the abstract grammar plays itself out per se. What a delicate balance. Monday, the 20th of February, 2012. 1. The poem, spoken untransformed, the data or armature upon which the work balances. This provides essential information that allows a safe location from where to view the work. It says to the listener, all of the sounds you are hearing are expressions of the implications of this poem. 2. The shaman's response to the poem, his reaction to the implications of the poetic imagery. The shaman expresses himself via vocal utterances that never make semantic sense. They are recognisably the same voice
as that of the poet, but they exist at a lower, more animistic level. The vocal apparatus is engaged in more primal expression of the poetic implications. 3, the sonic equivalents of the poetic imagery. Sonic versions of the central images of the poem expressing such lines as the falling glory, the death of the last immortal leaf, the passing of all shining things, etc. Note, the role of complete silence is critical. Periods of stillness between the spoken lines. These silences enable the sonic textures, making them more than simply illustrative. After each silence, we don't know whether we will hear a continuation of the poem, a beginning of another sonic gesture, or a further shamanistic utterance. This provides a strong structural device. Monday, the 27th of February, 2012. Still grappling with the glory piece, but have reached a basic structure which I think can work. Now need to generate further vocal textures for the inner array. This is a connected extra reality inhabited by the shaman. Needs to be recognisably voice-based, but never semantic. Some sort of stylized chant.
He's saying, therefore we, me, he's saying, and you, the reader and the poet, together.
Therefore, we also, blandly interoceptive earth. Splendors from us. Crumple them, hide them in thy breath, drive them in nothingness, for we would sleep. This is the passing of all shining things.
Bring to consciousness that
And yet there's no...
things go with the blend.
Yeah, there's nothing over
here.
So do
I. Think it's wrong. Therefore we also...
Let's get rid of the fucking thing.
We'll put something else in.
But what about this one? It come from the glorious kingdom.
Okay, Father.
I think all of those things are amazing.
Thank you.
be unto us, O soul. But straight, glad feet, fear-ruining and glory-girded faces lead us into the serious, steep darkness.
Wednesday, the 11th of April, 2012. The Glory is fallen, now complete, and I think the most successful work yet, insofar as its technical imaging is concerned. Don't know about its aesthetic effect. It marks another plateau in the growth curve I'm taking with the instrument. Much more natural disposition of materials amongst the three arrays, and much more care, mostly, with choice of files. There are still places where I see I've let myself down, though. Thursday, the 12th of April, 2012, point one. An aspect of the last few works which should worry me, but doesn't seem to, is the use of references, direct or transformed, to other earlier works. In both Visible Voices and The Glory Has Fallen, there are quotations from past pieces, less so in the latter. In Visible Voices, this was a device which sprang from the scenarios depicted in the work, various persons attempting to locate previously completed works as part of a find the file game. So I guess in that work it makes sense. In The Glory, the materials are based upon the event work, which was directly related to the earthquake experience. I realise The Glory is also directly related to this event. The poem carries, at one level at least, the idea of descending gladly into death. And so some of the files from Event fitted. It was interesting, however, that quite quickly the Glory work established its own aesthetic and structural requirements and left the earlier work behind. They make an interesting bracket, I think. Event being essentially a doco, and The Glory a poetic comment upon that narrative.